last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
So one of our favourite doctors is back with us. Dr. Harry Barry has a new book. We've enjoyed meeting him on all his previous books, which were very good on mindfulness and mental health and things like that. But his new book, Beneath the Surface, is different, because I think it's fair to say, Harry, this is the book that tells us how you became the doctor that you are.
Yes, I think, Matt, you know, as somebody said, it's one thing to be writing about, you know, mental health and all the issues connected with it, but this was laying myself bare, do you know what I mean? This is making myself vulnerable because, you know, a lot of people feel that you are the person you are because they see you now, but they don't realise that I had to go through many, many dark periods, you know, and very tough periods of life to get to where I am now. So when I talk about emotional resilience, I have lived it. Do you know what I mean? It's one thing to talk about it, but it's another thing to actually live it.
Because I always have assumed you're a very confident person.
I am quite confident. I'm quite confident in myself in that I'm very good at breaking things down, analysing stuff, you know, getting to the heart of things. But for example, when I decided to have a look at mental health, do you know what I mean, way back in the early 2000s, I was really upset at the way it was being looked at. We either had mental illness, which nobody wanted to talk about, or mental health wasn't even in the discussion at that point in time. And neuroscience was only just beginning to come into its own. And I am a great believer in neuroscience. So what I had to do really was I spent several years actually analysing all the information coming from everywhere. Do you know what I mean? And kind of over time, also by doing a good bit of work in CBT, do you know what I mean? And trying to understand the mind and how we think and trying to understand the brain and how it works. I kind of carved through it all and kind of come up with my own very simple approach to mental health, which I've applied over the years and which has been incredibly successful, which I'm very happy about. But part of that training came from my early days. Do you know what I mean? Like when I came to college, do you know what I mean? For the first couple of years when I was at college, I struggled like everybody else. One of the big mistakes I kept making was I kept trying to memorize information. And it was only a great conversation which I talk about in the book, where a very good friend of mine kind of said, look, the secret to this is you must learn to kind of almost interrogate information. Do you know what I mean?
So understand it.
Understand it and present the key facts. Do you know what I mean? So that brought me to the concept of the skeleton, which is what I've lived the rest of my life doing. The skeleton is all about breaking information up into kind of five little parts. Do you know what I mean? So if I read something, if I can't summarize it in five parts, I'll go back over it again and again and again until I can get to the key points. And that's incredibly useful when you move into areas like mental health. Do you know what I mean? Because you can very quickly analyze things and you get to the heart of them. You cut away all the rubbish, do you know what I mean? And you get to the key concepts. And to a certain extent, that was very useful when we decided, myself and Brenda, to go to Africa, do you know what I mean? But there it was very difficult because at that stage, mental health was way out of my mind. You know, the world was physical health because that's all that we, as GPs and as doctors, we were being taught at the time. So when you go out to Africa, all rules are off. There's no question. Anything that you learned, you know, to a certain extent, you have to reintegrate back into a kind of a completely different mode of life. So one of the things I learned was that, you know, if there's a problem, you're the person who's got to sort it out. You know what I mean? There's no point in looking. You could look around you, but so there was no blood bank.
This was in Tanzania in the early 1980s.
But children were dying like flies. Mothers were dying like flies. Awful things. I saw the most awful things out there. And yet, you know, what I felt was if we all worked together, we would find ways. So we created a blood bank. We taught all the midwives how to intubate. We brought the section rate down from 10% to 4%. Do you know what I mean? Children who had never walked because of polio, we managed to get them up and walking with the help of an orthopaedic surgeon. We got in and some crutches and some. So it was all a question of finding solutions. So to a certain extent, when I came back to Ireland...
Sorry, how long did you do that for?
We did that for 2 years.
And it was yourself and your wife went out?
My wife, and we went out with a four-month-old baby, and I delivered my own second child by bush lamp, 32-week-old premature baby, which was the most astonishing, you know, and it was never intended to be like that, but that's how...
And was she healthy?
And... what had happened really was that there was a midwife organised to try and deliver the baby, and when the midwife had to go off in an emergency, and my wife suddenly went into labour, I remember I was doing sections and triplets and turning babies in the womb and doing breaches and everything. So this was routine, really. Do you know what I mean?
Except it's your own child.
So I delivered my own child, which was the most extraordinary bonding experience for the three of us, and it was 2 days before Christmas. So it was almost like the Christmas story. Do you know, it was a beautiful story. But that's what I mean by when you're out in Africa, everything goes out by the book. You know what I mean?
But was it fair to be bringing up little infant children of your own there in such circumstances where presumably they were at greater risk than they would have been back in Ireland?
I've always believed, and I've often talked about it to parents, that it's, in my opinion, a child should fit into your family. Not you, the child should become your family. Do you know what I mean? So in other words, whatever you are, whatever the circumstances you are, whatever the difficulties, and we went through lots and lots of difficulties, even coming to Drogheda, at the end of the day, the child should fit into that. Do you know what I mean? And how is a child ever supposed to be resilient? Do you know what I mean? What's the point in talking to children about resilience if they're not seeing it in their own parents? You know, they saw us having to battle every step of the way. Do you know what I mean? And that creates a resilience in them, which has been wonderful to see. And I think that we nowadays are maybe at risk of protecting them too much, you know, saying that we mustn't expose them to too much, instead of saying, no, we were doing this for service to other people who needed help. Do you know what I mean? It was never our intention to bring small children into the world at this particular moment in time. But that's the way life is. Life is what happens just when we're busy planning for it.
But this is relevant to the book, given that it is your memoir. Go back to your own childhood, because I think you had to develop your own resilience, didn't you? Because your own childhood wasn't exactly the happiest.
It was very, very difficult because my father kept moving all the time. My mother lost her fiancé, do you know what I mean? Her original fiancé, which is talked about in the book. She was all set to be married, and he died of tuberculosis. And the story is a beautiful story told in the book. And from that, she met my father, but they kept moving. We moved three times in Dundalk, and then we moved to Wexford, and we were hardly there, and went to boarding school, which I absolutely hated. Was bullied in boarding school. Came back to Thurles. Knew nobody, spent 2 years, then came up to Dublin, knew nobody apart from my granny up there, do you know what I mean? So I was very much on my own a lot of the time, and I had to find my own strength and my own resilience. And it was lonely, do you know what I mean? And I talk about that loneliness, do you know what I mean? So this idea that, life should be easy, that life should be full of, that we should be able to protect our children. We weren't protected, do you know what I mean? We had to get out there in the real world. In those days, Matt, if you were 18, you either went to college or you went to work. Do you know what I mean? There was no question of staying at home. There was no question. Everybody left. So I was the only person in my family who went to college. I was the only person who did medicine. Do you know what I mean? So I was really breaking new ground as well. Do you know what I mean? So it was very, very difficult. But I still think the most important moment of my life, and I've written a little poem there called Moments, was when I met Brenda. Do you know what I mean? She was the person. I loved this person to bits. Do you know what I mean? I met her actually 50 years ago, 50 years ago this year. It's this beautiful, it shouldn't have happened because the Ola Max, the great hall in Earnsford Terrace, which is now the concert theatre, that's where we all did our exams. And it was this lovely concert being held by a fellow called Jamie Stone, who was a rock star at the time, and I'd known him originally, and my good friend Murdoch drags me down and says, come on, let's go down and listen to Jamie. I said, oh, well, if it's Jamie, I'll come down and listen to him. And when I was there, I just spotted her, and at that moment in time the lights went out, so I'd asked her to dance and the lights went out for about 5 minutes, and when I came back she was gone.
Literally, isn't just a metaphor you're using for being struck blind by love. Oh, no, the lights actually did go out. Okay.
But it was a beautiful thing because Murdoch was pulling at me saying, come on, you have to go, you have to go. And I said, no, there was something beautiful about that girl. So I went looking for her and I found her. And it was like, we just clicked immediately. There was just this instant chemistry and we could easily talk to each other. And, you know, from that moment on, we have been inseparable, really. I mean, it's a beautiful story. And like we have gone through so many adventures, we've had so many dreams, we've done so many things, but we've battled away together through every single, you know, good times, the bad times, the losses.
But hold on, how important is that to somebody's mental health to actually have a partner on whom they can rely and whom they can trust?
I think it's one of those great gifts of life, and one of the things that I talk about when I talk to people about resilience and I talk about self-care, I talk about the first thing is you must look after your own personal, mental and physical health. But after that, if you're lucky enough to have somebody you love in your life, you must protect that above all other things.
Okay, because not just having somebody that you love, but just having connection with and contact with other people, because somebody, and you might be able to correct me on this, but somebody was telling me recently that if somebody is a smoker, but if they actually have regular contact with other people, they are more likely to live longer than somebody who is not a smoker, but who is lonely and who does not have contact with people.
That loneliness is now regarded almost as an illness in itself, because loneliness really pumps up your internal glucocorticoid levels to really high levels. Your stress level goes right up. So what happens is your immune system gets dampened down. So you're far more likely to get heart attacks. You're far more likely to get cancers. So even though smoking is really, really bad for us.
And I'm not advocating smoking by using that example.
But loneliness is one of the most awful things. Do you know what I mean? And I keep saying to everybody, you know, I'm often asked, you know, what's the one great suggestion that I would make, you know, for somebody for their mental health, apart from the usual things like exercise and all. And that would be that we open up ourselves to other people. Do you know what I mean? So each day, if we have even one interaction with one person for that critical 5 minutes that means for that person, where you have that empathetic bond with that person, not only does that save their lives, but it might save your life. Do you know what I mean? So it's an incredible, simple mental health. Like I learned this from Sister Kieran, who...
out in Tanzania.
Absolutely. She is probably my mentor. She was the person we have worked most with in Tanzania. And she taught me this. Do you know what I mean?
But there was also, and just to finish on this, Harry, there's a piece in the book about how you had to help parents who'd lost a child to suicide, drowning in Drogheda.
Yes.
And 6 days waiting before the body could be found and recovered.
6 weeks.
6 weeks, sorry. 6 weeks. Awful for them.
So you imagine, and the body was only discovered close to Christmas.
But it did persuade you the fact that we need to intervene in medicine, don't we?
Yes.
Not just when somebody presents with serious mental health issues or depression or whatever, that the intervention needs to be at a much earlier stage.
Absolutely. It's like the famous thing of, you know, where this cardiologist was talked about seeing all these bodies floating downstream, and he kept jumping in and trying to save them. And then eventually he got tired of this and he said, I have to go upstream and try and find out where they're going in. And I use a different simile. I'd say it was supposed we taught you to swim to start with, so that even if you fell in, that you would survive. And that's really what I've been trying to do for the last 25 years. I mean, trying to teach people how to swim, you know, how to stand in your own two feet, how to develop your own emotion resilience, you know, how to become a genuine human being. Do you know what I mean? I just think that we're living a lot of falseness in this modern world. I think social media is creating a lot of falseness.
Is it not providing connections, though, for people? Okay, maybe it would be better if they had face-to-face human connections, but is it not better that at least they might have connections with other people via social media?
The worry I have is that those connections are false connections. Do you know what I mean? They don't have the same strength. We know that at least 60-70% of our communications with other people, our connections, are non-verbal. So, like, it's when the person is with you, it's how they seem.
And now we're talking about using AI bots for therapy.
Absolutely. It's terrifying. To me, that's terrifying. because we are lacking that human being. I think as a society, we all need to say, stop, hold on a minute now. We need to go back to basics. And the basics are that human interaction, that caring about and looking after each other, listening to each other, being empathetic to each other, because all the rest is nonsense.
Harry Barry, it's always great seeing you. Dr. Harry Barry, the book is called Beneath the Surface. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Matt.
The Last Word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.